My name's Joe. I'm an alcoholic. It's good to be here. I'm from Santa Monica, California. My home group is the Big Book Steps 10, 11, and 12 meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. We meet on Tuesday nights at 7:30 on the corner of 2nd and Hill in Santa Monica. I'd love for any of you to come if you're ever there. I'd like to thank the committee and Joni for inviting me. It's always an honor to be asked to share in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I think the only real problem with that is that I need to remember who gets the credit for that. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous in August 17, 1982. And because this program works in my life, I haven't had to take a drink. In thinking about this topic, there was a terrible problem. I was asked several months before this to share today, and I have probably given at least 20 or 30 talks before today in my own mind. They were wonderful. So rather than do that again, I said a prayer in the bathroom like I did the first time I was asked to do this. Hope that maybe it comes out better. There's a couple stories that came to mind in thinking about this topic for the last several months that have been shared with me that I think are appropriate to the topic of identification. And one of them is about the way I identified most of my life until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and I was given the freedom to quit identifying my problem as you, or it, or her. And it's a story about a man, God forbid, he's been sober forever and he's on his deathbed. And his wife is there, right by his side. And he looks up at her and he says, "Honey, after all these years, I've realized something." She says, "Well, what's that?" And he says, "Well, you were there that time I got shot, and you stood by me. You've always been there. And you were there that time I lost all our money in business. You were right there, and you stood by me. And you were there that time I had my first stroke, and you were stood by me. And you've always been right there, and you've always stood by me. And after all these years, I've realized one thing. You are a frigging jinx." The first time I heard that, I was reminded of how I think and how I identify my problem. And I related to that. In thinking about our common problem, and what are we supposed to say, or what was said to me, or how important it was to me that somebody shared the entire program of Alcoholics Anonymous with me at a time when I was literally dying of alcoholism and I didn't know it. Because I was going to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous believing that I was in Alcoholics Anonymous because I was a member of the fellowship. And a man said to me one day that I was dying of untreated alcoholism, and he told me the truth. He was willing to risk my sensitive alcoholic feelings and tell me the truth. So I was watching this movie a month ago, Old Gringo, with Jane Fonda and Gregory Peck. And there was this Spanish man who had been shot dying in bed. They were sitting by his bed. And in the middle of the night he woke in pain and he screamed in Spanish, "It hurts, it hurts." Gregory Peck went over to his bed to comfort him. And the Spanish man looked up at Gregory Peck and he said, "Am I dying?" And Gregory Peck said, "Yes." And he shook and he died. And Jane Fonda was looking at him with a look of puzzlement and she said, "How could you tell that man that he was dying?" And Gregory Peck said to her, "Well, every man deserves to know the truth at least once before he dies." She said, "But it's so sad to think of someone dying alone and afraid. Why did you tell him the truth? He didn't need the truth. He needed comfort." He said, why? Very few of us are given anything else before we go than that. And I understood that. I understood that scene in that movie. I related to that. I think before I begin, I only have a few minutes, but there are a few quotes that I've heard lately in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous that I wonder about concerning this topic. Quotes like, a drug is a drug, and alcoholism is addiction. And I wonder to myself how grateful that I am that someone helped me see the difference. I heard another guy say that there's as many ways to work the program as there are people in it. And I thought to myself, what have we become? An outpatient program with a different program for everybody that comes in? And I was sad. I heard another man say that we just don't drink no matter what. And I thought to myself, if I could do that, I would not be in Alcoholics Anonymous. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous in 1982, I had been to 10 treatment centers. I had been to the penitentiary as a direct result of my drinking. I had lost my family. I had lost everything worthwhile in life. And I woke up one day in a motel in Denver, Colorado, where I got sober and I couldn't drink anymore. And I don't know how that happens for a guy like me. And I went back to a treatment center where I heard the message of Alcoholics Anonymous that has kept me coming back until today. An excitement, and a joy, a love, a freedom, an answer to the question, what's wrong with me, that had been in the back of my mind since before I ever took a drink. I don't know how many of you will relate to this, but I'm the guy that at age 10, 11, and 12 would sit in the backyard waiting for a spaceship to land and a little green man get out and tell me, you weren't really born here on this planet. We brought you here as a teeny baby. This has been a test. Because I felt different, and I felt separate, and I felt out of place. And I set out on a journey from age 13 to 30 to find out an answer to that question that was in the back of my mind before I ever took a drink. What's wrong with me? What's wrong with me? I'm released from the Michigan State Penitentiary, age 21, and I report to my PO 28 days out of the penitentiary, and he tells me every reason why I shouldn't drink. He tells me how great I'm doing. I walk out of his office into a bar to buy a pack of cigarettes, pick up a drink, and wake up 5 days later 125 miles away. And I didn't want to do that. I was taken from a locked ward in a psychiatric unit to my father's funeral. He had died in the same hospital that I was in. And he didn't know I was there, being detoxified from alcohol. And they took me to his funeral, and my mother said to me something she had never said to me in the 19 years that I had been alive and the 6 years that I had been drinking. She said to me, please don't show up drunk at your father's funeral. And I said to her, with all the love and everything I could muster, I won't. And I meant it. And I asked him, could I go across the street to see a friend, because a guard had brought me to my own father's funeral. And I said to my friend, can I have a beer? I'd like to cool down just a little bit before the funeral. And somewhere between the second one and the 20th one, I lost the power of choice over how much I was going to drink. And I showed up to my daddy's funeral so messed up that the guard that brought me chained me to a tree by my ankle at my own father's funeral. And I didn't want to do that. And there was day after day after day after day in my life from before I ever took a drink where that question was in the pit of my stomach. What's wrong with me? I set out to find out. I tried to find out in treatment centers. I tried to find out in college. I got a degree in psychology. I became a therapist in a treatment center, drinking with the director of the program that I worked for. Desperately trying to find out what's wrong with me. And in the pages of a book that my sponsor began to share with me when I reached a point in Alcoholics Anonymous where I couldn't pull off on purpose what I used to do by mistake. That day that you reach in Alcoholics Anonymous, I used to pull off unbelievable stuff by mistake drunk. Money, jobs, relationships, getting out of scrapes. And I reached a point in my sobriety after 5.5 months where I couldn't do on purpose what I used to do by mistake. And I saw that. And I went to a man who's been my sponsor ever since, and I asked him to help me. And he took me through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, page by page by page. He laid the program out in front of me. He took me to assemblies, and I followed him around to conventions until it was my turn. And in doing that, I found out the answer to that question. I have a physical and a mental and a spiritual malady that no human being can relieve, and that's not just low self-esteem. I have a physical, mental, and a spiritual disease that no human being, no human power can relieve, and that's not just compulsive, obsessive behavior that I can change. I found out the difference between my alcoholism and my addiction. I got clear on alcoholism because of a man that was willing to take the time to help me find out the answer to that question. What's wrong with me? What can I do? And what am I going to do once I find something? And I found that in a three-part program. And I found that sitting in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous as a member of the fellowship did not qualify me to be in AA. That there were two parts I was not involved in. I found out the only requirement for membership is not the only requirement for this guy to stay sober. My strongest desire never lasted 28 days ever in 17 years. And I started to identify. I read Bill's story. I had a real problem. I'm not a stockbroker, never been married, and didn't go to war. They told me, forget the differences, look for the similarities, and start to do that in meetings. And I found myself relating to women several different ways. I started relating to men that had lived on Skid Row. I'd only been there in my gut, but I understood them. I'd lived from the penthouse to the streets, and I didn't think I understood. I thought I was different. Don't you understand? I'm an alcoholic and a whatever. Anything to separate myself from you. That's what my disease is all about. That's the function of my ego. Here, in Alcoholics Anonymous, let alone in the 17 years that I drank, it will do anything it can to separate me from you. And I started to go through the recovery process of Alcoholics Anonymous. And my life started to change. And I started to identify to you. I started to understand how you feel, because I started to understand how I feel. I started to understand the God in you, because I began to experience the God in me. I'm very grateful for the people that encouraged me to find something within myself. So at 3 o'clock in the morning, if the phone was off the hook, and there wasn't a meeting to go to, that there is a place within me that I can go and find the answer to that question at any given moment. What's wrong with me? And give me the tools to do something with those things. When I face resentment, when I face fear, when I'm consumed by self, the program that was laid out for me is available. I wasn't going to tell this, but I heard a story not too long ago, and it really made me angry, and I knew there was something I needed to look at. In our inventory process, where I begin to identify the things that block me from God, I started to see the great statement of hope from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, that our troubles are of our own making, and I get free. Because for 30 years until I came to this program, my troubles were of your making. It was because of the way I was raised. It was because my daddy was 57 when I was born. It was because of this or because of that, and if only they would have been different. And somewhere in this process, I began to experience the freedom, seeing that my troubles are of my own making. I am no longer a victim, nor do I have a bumper sticker that says shit happens. I'm no longer a victim of bad luck. I have no trouble at all bringing it on myself. I don't need any help. The only part about that is that my troubles rise out of myself, and I am an extreme example of self-will run riot, though I usually don't think so. In the 10th and 11th step, I begin to identify what's going on, what's blocking me from God. And I heard this story, and this man said, you know, God forbid, but if you took 100 of us from Alcoholics Anonymous and put us back in the bar, you know what you'd find? He said you'd find about 20 or 30 belly up to the bar, wallowing in their beer, crying in their whiskey. And the sad thing about that is some of them wouldn't know there's anything more to find in alcohol, and some of them would enjoy it. He said then you'll find about 20 or 30 in the middle of the bar, sitting at the tables, come in, drink till they feel good, and then they go home. He said, then you'll find about 30 or 40 mad dogs in and out of the bar, going here, going there, doing this, going for the gusto, do it to the max, getting in fights, going to jail, doing it up. Because they know there's more to find in alcohol, and it doesn't just begin with feeling good. He said, now take those 100 people, put them back in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, you'll find a very sad thing. They will usually settle for what they did when they were drinking. And I'm here to tell you, I will not sit in these rooms and wallow in my big book and cry in my stuff, because I know one thing, there is a solution. I will not sit in these rooms and come in and do enough till I feel good and go home, because when I've done that, my own gratitude begins to choke me, because I'm not giving it away. I was a mad dog then, I'm a mad dog now. Several questions came to my mind in considering this topic. Is alcoholism addiction? Is there a difference? Have we become an outpatient treatment program with an individual program for everybody that walks in, and that you're terribly different than me? Or do we have a common problem that we can share in? Do we have a common solution? And do we have a common purpose once we find that solution for the rest of our lives? I mean, that's all I ever wanted. I wanted to do something that meant something, and nothing I was doing meant anything to anybody but me. Thank you for letting me share.
Me to walk up here all by myself. My name is Rosemary and I'm an alcoholic. Really happy to be here. God, that's a sea of faces out there. It's an honor to be asked to participate in this workshop, and I thank Joni for that. I'm a member of the Penfield Friday Night group in Penfield, New York, which is a suburb of Rochester, New York, which is upstate New York, 400 miles from New York City. This is really quite an experience, and I understand that the nerves and the shakes and all of that. And they say if you just get up there and open your mouth and leave the results to God, you'll be all right. You won't die. Our topic this afternoon is identification. Are we losing it? I think that many of you will agree that this is a very controversial topic in Alcoholics Anonymous today. Identification means two things to me. It means how I identify myself or introduce myself in an AA meeting. It also means what I talk about in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, thus allowing other members to identify with me. I'd like to talk a little bit about how we introduce ourselves. I read an article a while back in our archives publication, Markings, about the origins of our custom of introduction. My name is, and I'm an alcoholic. It is not known where it first started, but speculation is that it probably started in the larger Oxford group meetings. And as most customs in AA, it just grew to the point of being a worldwide custom today. Has this custom changed? In my neck of the woods in New York State, it has changed so much so that we hear many forms of introduction. We hear introductions which never mention the word alcoholic, such as I'm chemically dependent, I'm cross-addicted, I'm powerless. And one gaining in popularity today, I'm a recovering person. When I hear these in an AA meeting, I feel as though I'm left hanging. I always want to help them finish. You're a cross-addicted what? You're powerless over what? You're recovering from what? I need to know what it is that we have in common. I need to know that I'm there for the same reason that you are, recovery from the disease of alcoholism. I realize that these introductions can get lengthy, and in an effort to get on with their comments, some members just drop the last word. But isn't that the one word which connects us to each other? Isn't that the one word which speaks directly to our purpose in being there? I would strongly suggest that in the interest of brevity, clarity, and simplicity, the extras be dropped and the essence of our common bond be inserted. There are also those forms of introduction which do include the word alcoholic, but still preface it by saying what type. These include, I'm a cross-addicted alcoholic, I'm a drug addict and alcoholic, I'm an overeater and an alcoholic, and one which takes someone else's inventory. I'm an alcoholic, adult child of an alcoholic. In my opinion, these are the descriptions which separate us. When I say I'm a drug addict and an alcoholic, or I'm a cross-addicted alcoholic, or any of the other varieties, I'm telling you that I'm different from you. I have this extra distinction which sets me apart, allows me to be unique. That may be fine for the rest of society, but in our case, uniqueness kills. Whether I'm aware of it or not, it allows me an opening in which I can wiggle out. It diverts my attention from my one purpose in being in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not saying that Alcoholics Anonymous is for the pure alcoholic. I don't know any pure alcoholics. That is not the point. Many of us have other problems or diseases that we are dealing with, but we don't use them as labels in an AA meeting. The point is one of focus. When I am in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, my focus must be on my alcoholism and recovery from it. Without that, I'm doomed. I've heard members explain why they use these other forms of introduction. And all of them say, without exception, that it is not because they feel unique. It is usually for two reasons. First, so that they won't forget what they are. And second, so that others who also share their other problems will be able to identify and feel comfortable. In my opinion, and this is all my opinion, I do not speak for Alcoholics Anonymous or for the General Service Office. In my opinion, these reasons are not good enough to risk the disunity and the dilution which is occurring. If I am still clinging to the treatment center jargon after some time in AA, with the excuse that I need to remember so that I don't forget, I'm still in the me's of the disease and not in the we of our program. And if my reason is to help newcomers who have similar additional problems, I'm giving out the wrong message. I'm implying that AA can also help them in these other areas. I do believe this, that AA will help us arrest our alcoholism so that we can seek the proper help we need for our other problems. The beauty of Alcoholics Anonymous has been its simplicity of focus. One alcoholic talking to another alcoholic. When we as members interject other descriptions into our identification, the focus blurs. The sense of belonging so necessary for every alcoholic who hears us is challenged. I am so grateful that when I came into AA several years ago, I heard the language that allowed me to fit in, that told me I belonged there, and allowed me to feel as though I was amongst my own. People referred to their alcoholism as a disease. In fact, that point was so emphasized that I could begin to look at myself as a sick person, not a bad person who allowed a habit to take over her life. I believe that point, that alcoholism is a disease, is being lost today, as more evasive terminology is being introduced into our meetings. Today we hear people refer to their addiction rather than their alcoholism. We hear people refer to their drinking as using. And this language comes from people who have had no history other than aspirin in their backgrounds. It is clear that we have been influenced by outside therapies, bringing with the adoption of their one language fits all into AA meetings. One language does not fit all, and neither does one 12-step program. That's why there are other fellowships such as NA, OA, GA, and others. Our languages are distinct. Our focus is distinct, and our success is distinct. We have a responsibility pledge in AA which states, whenever anyone anywhere reaches out for help, I want the hand of AA always to be there, and for that I am responsible. This pledge is often misconstrued as meaning that the AA program can help all kinds of disorders. I don't believe that's what it means at all. I believe it means two things, the most important of which is the continuation of AA, so that when our children, our grandchildren, and our great-grandchildren need us, we'll be here. And its second meaning is that when people come to us with other problems, we can direct them to those other 12-step programs which are designed to help them. It is supreme ego on our part to believe that God chose us to save the world all by ourselves. Change is a necessary part of growing. Without it, we will stagnate and eventually wither. But the changes must occur within each individual member. Our personalities is evidenced by our attitudes and actions. Our program is in place. It consists of the 12 steps, the 12 traditions, and the 12 concepts. We do not have to alter it or redesign it. All we need to do, each one of us, is to know it, practice it, and to pass it on to the newer member unchanged. There are two quotations which I am reminded of often today, pertinent to our survival. The first one, I believe, is from Carl Sandburg. He states that whenever a people have vanished, it is because they forgot where they came from. That is certainly evidenced by our predecessors, the Washingtonians. In the 1840s, they were a society of ex-drunks who started out to help other drunks get sober. They allowed themselves to be diverted, so that eventually they lost their original intent, and within just a few short years of their glory, they vanished. The second quotation is often credited to our co-founder, Bill W., and that is, if AA is ever destroyed, it will be destroyed from within. I don't for a moment believe that our society will ever be torn apart by any outside force, whether it be treatment centers, courts, or the New Age. I believe that the destructive force will be born out of apathy, the apathy within. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Jerry Jones, and I'm an alcoholic. Usually, I say that I'm also the adult spouse of an Al-Anon, but... I don't think it's appropriate for me to say that today. (laughs) So I won't. I want to thank my good friend from Houston for asking me to be here. I want to thank my fellow panel members for their remarks. And I want to thank you for caring enough about Alcoholics Anonymous to be here. Give yourself a hand. What we are talking about here today is near and dear to the hearts of all of us. Recently, in my group, we had a two or three session business meeting, a group conscious meeting, to discuss whether or not we should read the General Service Office statement about restricting our comments to our experience having to do with alcoholism. And it surprised me that it was as gut-wrenching an experience for the group as it turned out to be. It seemed that there were as many who were threatened one way as there were the other. And the truth of the matter is that all of us in that room, in that business meeting, knew that what had happened in those meetings and with the book was as vital and as important to my life as anything had ever been. This was my life. This had saved my life. I wanted to protect that which had saved my life. It once seemed simple to me. It once seemed simple to me that we ought to do it the way I did it, the way it was done when I got here. But the problem is change occurs. You mentioned change. Change occurs. And change is a troublesome thing for alcoholics. We don't do change well. You got to be careful with change too. I want to digress a moment. I saw there's a guy downtown in Dallas recently. He was walking around. And he had a peg leg, a wooden leg, and he had a hook on one hand and a patch over one eye. And he had a little funny black hat, three-pointed hat, you know. And he was wearing kind of a funny-looking coat. And a guy walked up to him and said, "What are you going to, a masquerade party as a pirate or something?" And he said, "I am a pirate." He said, "I graduated from pirate school and everything. I'm a pirate." And he said, "Really?" He said, "What happened to your leg?" He said, Pirate school. I said, "I lost my leg in a lifeboat drill." I said, "I was trying to get back in the boat after the lifeboat, and a shark came along and just snapped it off." I said, "I thought I was through. I thought I was washed out of pirate school because I'd lost my leg." But he said, "Turns out, doesn't happen that way." I said, "They healed me up, took me over to a big room, and said they had all kinds of peg legs in there. And let me take any one I want. I put it on," and he said, "I was right back in pirate school." I said, "What about your hands?" He said, "Oh, my hands." I said, "I got that in sword school." I said, we were having a little sword duel, and said, "I just made one little mistake, and it's gone." And said, I really thought I was washed up again in pirate school. But he said, "They healed me up, took me over to a locker there," and he said, "I bet they had 30 kinds of hooks in there that you could put on your hand, screw it on there, just all kinds of hooks." I said, "I got one I liked." He said, "Well, I guess you lost your eye in pirate school too." And he said, no, actually that was after pirate school. So we'd had graduation exercise and everything, and we were coming sailing back in the harbor. And so we'd been out at sea for a long time. So I hadn't seen anything to look at except the ship and those other guys there. And I looked up, and there came a beautiful seagull flying over. Just flying along so graceful, and sailed over me. And just as he passed over me, he let go a load and got me right in the eye. The guy said, "You mean that put your eye out?" And he said, "No, but see, I hadn't used my hook but for 2 days. I like spiritual stories, don't you? See, some of Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't think will ever really change. Commonality is the transmission line between us. We have common reactions to life. And the first reaction we have was with the bad luck and the disease that we had with that got us together. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and I was a lot different than anybody else. I had been pretty damn successful, and I just had a little drinking problem, and just as soon as I could get a handle on that, I was gone. Not like you. You had some different problems. I could tell just looking that you were different from me. Only to find when I stayed there a little while, and as you shared with me the language of the heart, where you told me who you really were, when you told me how you really felt, then I could identify. And because I could identify in that common solution, I was led inextricably and just drawn into another dimension, which is called the solution. You told me how I had to recover. And I resisted it. You told me I needed to introduce myself as an alcoholic. In Texas, they say you give an alcoholic, you say you're an alcoholic, and you say then your sobriety date. Mine's January 1st, 1973. They say if you don't do that in Texas, you ain't got one. So you might not have one. And so they make sure you tell about it. If you're going to lie about it, it'll eat you up after a while, and you know, you'll get back to square one. So we're led into this common solution. And we find that the cause of us, our problem, really the deep problem, is the same also. It's probably the same for all men, but it's really the same for us. And when we make these discoveries, they're very important to us. But as time has gone along, lots of things have happened since I got sober. It was very rare to hear anybody talk about drugs when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. Oh, a few ladies had been to doctors who thought that alcoholism was a Valium deficiency, and so they'd given them lots of Valium. But there wasn't much of anything else going on. And then pretty soon we began to get the treatment centers. And the treatment centers gave us the words that we talk about, the buzzwords. You know, the fact that it's all just an addiction to chemicals and that sort of thing. You begin to lose track of the idea of alcohol versus something else. And then you run across a whole generation of young people who are coming to us today that don't have a goose's idea what they're addicted to. They stuck it in every orifice and did it everywhere you could do it, and they wound up there. And I've seen a lot of them, you know, come and they don't know what they're addicted to. And it's led to a lot of words, like I'm dually addicted. And they race around and go to different programs, and they look for something, always looking. Well, I had it easier than that. There wasn't any place else for me to look when I got here. There wasn't any 12-step program for anything else that I had wrong with me that I could find. So I was stuck with one that had all the solution. You see, all of them, all those 12-step programs, I think, have the same solution. The solution is a power greater than ourselves. The solution is something that comes in your life and brings about a remarkable change in your attitudes and your ideas and your values and the concepts. Gives you new ways to move out in life. And to live, and to have fun, and go on with your life. That's what happens here. The third tradition is often cited as the reason why we got to be very careful who we let in here. And the third tradition says that we carry this message. You know, our only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking. But you see, that same tradition carries with it another aspect. It's self-diagnosis. It's self-diagnosis. Nobody took an application from me when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't have to pass any damn test to get in.
Turn the tape over now to continue with this program.
I was given a thing that I've heard people stand at podiums and talk about by the hour as saving their ass. And that's unconditional love. People took me just like I was, warts and all, and let me sort it out the best way I could. We're better off today. We're helped today by the fact that the world has taken our basic program and given it to a lot of different groups of people who have other problems. Because when I first came to AA, when people came to us, and they did come to us. There were people all the time passing through AA looking for some kind of a solution that I didn't think were alcoholics. I judged them. And I really thought we ought to kind of tighten up the membership requirement. We got some undesirables who came to my group. So Some of them didn't even have alligator shoes. Some of them didn't have any shoes at all. That was a. But the fact is that we didn't make those rules, and we tried to be helpful. You know, we're not people who would normally mix, but we are, when we get into the solution, people who meet on the common ground of love and tolerance and acceptance, and goodwill towards each other, unselfishness, trying to be helpful to our fellow man. I think that we will solve the problem of identification if you and I go to the AA meetings, our home group, and practice the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous in dealing with the multitude of problems and the multitude of people who come to us. If we deal with them on a one-to-one basis without exclusionary rules, but just in an effort to try to be helpful, to let people find out who they are, let them diagnose themselves, give them slack, give them the benefit of our experience, talk the language that we think ought to be talked, live the life that we think ought to be lived. Because you got to walk the walk. It's not just conversation. And if you and I do that, I think we'll come through this on the other side stronger, better, and more tolerant than we were going in. I believe that because I know you. I know you are good people. And I know that you are full of love. And each of us does our own thing. That's what we do. God bless. We're people who are well-intentioned. We're people who are searching for and finding a power greater than ourselves. And we're applying that in our lives and trying to move from a life of self-centeredness to a life of God-centeredness, a life of love and service. And I think we'll make the turn. Thank you so much.
Thank you all so much. I mean, weren't they just magnificent, Sharon? They're